Totally good.
I call the Committee on Government Operations to order on Friday, March 31st, 2017 at 12:06 p.m. in the President's Conference Room on the third floor of the Joe Crowley Student Union. Moving to agenda item two, roll call.
Senator Bond?
Here.
Senator Feng?
Present.
Senator Jacoby?
Present.
Senator Jordan?
Present.
Senator McAbala?
Absent.
Senator Smith?
Present.
Senator Jackson?
Present.
All right. Moving to agenda item four, adoption of minutes. I'm seeking a motion.
They're all ready.
Senator Jackson.
I move to approve the minutes from February 24th, March 3rd, and March 10th through unanimous consent.
Is there a dissent to the motion? Seeing none, motion carries. Moving to agenda item 6A, new business, Senate Bill Resolution, a binding resolution to modify the club sport funding manual. Director Wong is here to present his changes.
Perfect. Thank you very much. So this has been a long time coming, and we're finally excited to say that we've got it on a couple different agendas. And so it's a big policy manual, and if you don't have them side by side, it's hard to compare exactly what's changed in between the two, unless you've been part of the discussion right from the get-go. And so what we wanted to do was create this presentation for you so that we can kind of show you all of the changes that changed the intent of the policy manual. And then there was a bunch of other stuff that was just housekeeping, like grammar changes and things that we didn't need to run by you anyway. So I'm just gonna talk about all of our changes. Nice, okay. So outline, I'm gonna talk about a little bit of the background information before moving into the major changes, the minor changes, and then some administrative changes, housekeeping that makes all the policies come together. So spark notes of the old system. This is what you see when you first look at the club sport funding policy manual. It's kind of really confusing if you have no idea what tier one through five is. But when you read the policy manual, this is what it turns into. Tier one, on campus. Tier two, travel. Three, on campus, but it's restricted attendance. And all of those are funded at a 60% rate by the Department of Clubs and Organizations, and the club has to come up with the other 40%. Then it moves into the last two tiers, the tier four and tier five, which are for infrastructure and community service, and those are funded at 100%. There's not really a common theme with this system. Some of the tiers are based on location, right, one through three. Some of them are based on the type of event, like tier five for community service. Some of them have restrictions that are based on the target audience. So tiers one and three, right, on campus to all students or just the club. And tier four is meant for general club spending, but it isn't labeled as clearly as possible, so they don't really know that. But we'll get to that later. So a little bit more background. We've got funding periods. And you guys have all seen this or heard of this at least. And this is just kind of the way it breaks down. We've got summer, fall one, fall two, spring one, and spring two. Now, the problem that we kind of have been noticing with this, and it's something that we're going to try to alleviate, but we have to take baby steps to do so. Again, I'll talk about that a little bit later, I'll give you an example. Say, for instance, you've got an event on April 10th. So if you look at the spring one funding dates over there, April 10th is encompassed in that funding period, but you would have to apply by January 27th for that money that's gonna be spent for 3 months later. So that's kind of, you know, a big time lapse there. It's a lot to for the clubs to, you know, have to plan in advance. So that's kind of a small problem as well. So moving into our major changes, we want to structure it. This is kind of the core structure for it. And you'll notice this on pages 8 and 9 of the policy manual that you guys have. We've tried to label all of these slides well for you so you can follow through the policy manual if you choose. If not, it's all right as well. So major changes, it's going to be an operations funding tier, which is going to be 100% funded. There will be an on-campus tier and an off-campus tier and a travel tier, all of which are going to be funded at a 60-40 split, same as before. Now the difference is with on-campus and off-campus, you may say, oh, well, where's our community service? Well, it hasn't disappeared, it's just kind of morphed into two different tiers. So what we're doing is on campus and off campus, we're adding $250 bonus at 100% funded from the department if your on campus or off campus tier funding request has to do with community service. So it hasn't disappeared, it's still there, it's just changed. So moving into a little bit of comparison, hopefully you guys can see the colors on there. I know there's a bit of glare from outside. Basically, the old system, we had tiers that weren't intuitive, and they often caused a bunch of confusion. So a club may say, oh, I want tier one instead of tier four, because tier one's better. But they don't really know that, they're just saying it, and when in reality, tier four is 100% funded and tier one is 60% funded. We had three tiers that were based on the location of the event. Two of them also had sub-restrictions on audience. We had one tier that was based on the type of event, which also overlapped with other tiers in the system. And so again, it's not super intuitive. We also had the infrastructure tier, which is being renamed to the operations tier. And it's being treated more like base funding. It's not event specific, so why should we have to have the clubs abide by funding periods? And so we'll get into that a little bit more later as well. So the new system that we're going for is super intuitive. It's a base tier hybrid system. The base tier is for operations. It's super flexible, high liquidity, and it's meant for whatever clubs want to spend it on. And there are other tiers based on location. So you've got on-campus events for campus happenings, off-campus events for off-campus happenings that are within 60 miles, and then you have the travel tier, which is general for out-of-state things like conference, competition, stuff like that. And it's super straightforward. Our main point is that our new system is easier for everyone to use. It's flexible, and it's easier because the main thing is it's going to be easier because we have college students that graduate and new leaders take over, and they have to relearn the system every single year. And so with an easier system, that just makes the whole transition process that much better. So the major changes with funding, at least, the old system, we had tier one, which was $4,000 per semester, and that now changes into the on-campus tier, which is funded at the $6,000 per year rate. And we're decreasing it from the $8,000 per year because we never see organizations spend more than $6,000 anyways. That was, I think, the biggest event that we saw, at least in my last 3 years, was like $6,200, and it was once. So yeah. Tier two was funded at $2,000 a year, and it's now changed to the travel. It's gonna see an increase because it's the only cap that clubs hit regularly, especially science and engineering and sports and recreation clubs. Tier four has changed to operations, it stayed the same. Tier five has increased more, and it's flexible bonus to on and off campus since we split it between those two tiers. And then the off-campus tier is actually something a little bit experimental. This $1,000 cap that we put on there is just kind of an estimate because we don't have any data to really support that right now, because we only had tier two, which dealt with everything travel, whether that was within the city or whether that was out of state. And so this one, since we've got two travel tiers, is a little bit different. And again, the $250 community service bonus, I wanted to mention, it's not going to penalize the cap on those two on and off campus. That's just extra money. Cool. So major changes for the operations tier. We've got, like, this is what I was talking about earlier with the funding periods. We can't totally get rid of them yet, because what it does is if you get rid of them, it'll create a first-come, first-served scenario on the funding where some clubs will get the short end of the stick, and it makes it hard to know how much funding is left for clubs to request. But moving operations tier, so it's not bound by a funding period anymore, and you can find this on page 7 if you'd like, allows them to more flexibility and moves towards getting rid of funding periods eventually. The idea with it is that the funds are going to last 1 month after the approval date. So that moves into the automatically remitted funds, the second thing down there on page 17. So right now what happens is we've got, you request $100. If you don't, let's say you spend $50 or $60 of it. If you don't come into the department and say, I want to remit the $40 that you didn't spend, then that doesn't go back into your funding cap and you can't request it again for the rest of the year. But if you do come into the funding, into our meeting and say, I want to remit those $40, that goes back into your cap, and instead of having, say, $940 to spend, now you've got $960 to spend. Does that make sense? Okay. So with automatically remitted funds, when the operations tier funds expire that 1 month after they've been approved, we're just going to have them automatically remitted, so it's not penalizing the clubs. And again, that example is up there for you. So for minor changes, we're going to also have the first right of refusal for the Nevada Wolf Shop. So clubs, we want to suggest that they must go through the Wolf Shop for apparel items, and if the Wolf Shop doesn't do price matching, then clubs can go elsewhere, because we don't want to make them spend more money than they absolutely have to, but we do want to see more business down there. Emergency requests for minor changes, on-campus funding and off-campus funding. You can find this on page 10. So we added the off-campus basically as its new tier. And so we capped it at $1,000. And then on campus, we added emergency funding for on campus to make it equitable. Basically, the commission voted on it and they said, well, we're either going to allow emergency funding for both or none at all. And so that's why we added that in there. Travel was always eligible for emergency funding. And the cap is unchanged, which is why you don't see that reflected on this slide. And yeah, James, go ahead.
A question on the name of off-campus funding. Mm-hmm. That's just travel, right?
No. It's travel, conference registration. All the, it's basically what tier two is.
It's outside of Reno.
Yeah.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure it wasn't moving to letting people throw parties at the wall.
Right, no.
Yeah, it's a 60 within 60-mile radius of the main campus is what we decided on for the definition of on-campus events.
So outside of 60 miles?
No, within 60 miles.
Travel is for outside of the 60 miles.
Okay. And so for on-campus, then they get funding for the wall?
No, it's we limited on-campus to the University of Nevada main campus. So
okay, and then off-campus is 60 miles out?
Yes.
Yep.
All right. And then we kind of left it up to the commission to decide if it's an emergency or if it was just poor planning. Because emergencies don't really care if the event's on or off campus. They just happen. And so this system will allow for flexibility and working with clubs more. So some more minor changes pertaining now to fundraising, food and beverages, and co-sponsored events. So we removed the funding restrictions, or fundraising restrictions, from tier one. So basically the way it sits right now is if you're doing a fundraising event and you're requesting tier one funding, all of the money that you fundraise then has to be donated to charity. And if you're doing a tier four event, which is that infrastructure tier, and you're doing it for fundraising, you can pocket all that money as the organization. So we removed the tier one restriction because, I mean, why not have them, you know, build for the club, you know, build more money. It improves club growth because, and then which means that clubs are better off, which means that we get more students involved, which means we see higher retention and graduation rates. So that was kind of the focus there. With food and beverages, that's on page 10. Recruitment events, the max, we adjusted it from one food request per semester to three requests per semester. Recruiting is kind of the lifeblood of clubs, and you know, maybe they want to recruit, say, three times for the first week and then catch students on, you know, their different schedules. Then they should be allowed to do so. And so that's why we changed that there. For the workshop and lecture series, we adjusted that from 3 to 5 per the semester. And that way it just kind of reflects one per month of the semester, at least. And then for closed dinner and catering, we added this to one per semester to adjust for the removal of Tier 3. And because that was kind of the only thing that organizations were using Tier 3 for anyways. Remember, Tier 3 was the on-campus events that were restricted to club members only. We don't see a ton of requests in that tier anymore, and when we do, it's oftentimes like banquets and things like that. And then co-sponsored events. 4K was the max tier one per semester, and now it's $6,000 to match with the on-campus limits. Basically, why punish big events? It's their tier cap to use it as they want to. And so I don't think we should really put stipulations on that. Co-sponsoring, basically we fund, so say there's three organizations that want to do it. Since now it's at $6,000, each of them can bring, say Brennan wants to bring $1,000, and I want to bring $2,000, and Funding Manager Desmero wants to bring $3,000. That adds up to the $6,000 cap. That's fine. We just don't fund any more than the $6,000. Cool. A couple more minor changes: capital expenditure, early funding, and gift in kind. So, capital expenditure. What we've done this year is remove the no list restriction. That's on page 14. Basically, capital expenditures are anything that costs more than $100 and have a useful life expectancy of more than 3 years. Now, basically why we didn't fund these was we didn't want a club to, say, buy, I don't know, a computer, and then the club member that purchased it graduates and walks off with the computer. And so before that was funded, wasn't funded at all. What the commission did this year was we funded up to $100 of that request. That way it doesn't punish clubs who want expensive items, just puts a cap on it to be, you know, fiscally responsible, or financially responsible. For early funding requests, we adjusted it to 30 days from 21 days, just so that it is a month. 21 days was kind of random, 3 weeks was didn't really matter that much. Basically what the early funding request says is you can request early funding if your event is going to fall within the first, what is now 30 days of the funding period. And then we also removed the gift in kind regulations that our policy manual had before, which said that gift in kind can only count towards 25% of the 40% contribution that the club must provide. Now, does everyone know what gift in kind is? No? Okay. James, you had a question.
I was going to ask, do you define gift in kind there? Because I've heard it getting thrown around a little bit at the club things that I've been at, and people aren't clear.
I'm pretty sure it's defined, is it?
It says gift in kind. Yeah.
It is defined. Okay, cool. So gift in kind is basically any thing that's not monetary that the club can bring. So it's donated by somebody. I'll use Esports for instance. They have donated often a lot for their big events, things like headsets or keyboards or mice or Monster Energy drinks, things like that, where it's things that do cost money and add to the quality of the event, but it's money that the club doesn't have to spend because those things would have been purchased anyways. And so now we're not saying, oh, it's only 25%, it's 40%. It incentivizes clubs going out and attaining sponsorships from people, getting into the community, and we thought that was a very positive thing. A couple more minor changes: apparel, banners, copies. For the apparel funding caps, that's on page 13. Jerseys, we added a cap of $10 or $20 on jerseys, depending on whether they're embroidered or screen printed. In the past, jerseys have been funded at t-shirt rate, which was $6, and jerseys aren't t-shirts and they cost a whole lot more. And so that was something that we figured the department needed to add. Polos, again, they're more expensive than t-shirts, so we adjusted from the $8 cap to $10 because that reflects more of what the cost is now. James?
Can regular clubs get jerseys?
I mean, I guess that's a commission decision for when it comes up, right, to set precedent for that year, but it's not defined, I don't think.
Yeah, it's just one of those things, if you're going to do it for one club, you have to do it for all clubs. Mm-hmm. So.
I mean, I don't see why not, I think. We don't really restrict it in the policy manual, so if a club wants a jersey for like a club social or something, I think it would be fine.
And then the sweatshirt and sweatpants we adjusted to differentiate between whether they're embroidered or not as well. And then banners, we're saying that they should have the ASUN logo on it because banners are generally, they fall in that capital expenditure item. They're a little bit more expensive. And it helps to brand ASUN, and especially with the organizations that are a part of it. And we removed the restriction that said that we could only, clubs could only request one banner per year, and now, or one banner every 2 years. If they want a banner every year, you know, say their logo has changed or something, then there shouldn't be a reason that they can't get that. And then it looks like this got pushed down a little bit into the blue there, sorry. What that says is coffee funding cap. It's on page 14, and it's reduced to 20 cents for color and 10 cents for black and white, just to reflect what the at one does. And moving into administrative changes. So definitions for off-campus event, you can read that if you so choose. Off-campus event is an event or activity which is held within 60-mile radius to the university main campus and within the Nevada state borders. We need to add that definition so that it makes sense for the tier. For the club support funding requests, we defined it, as you'll see up there on page 7, so that it makes it that we can hear the operations tier, since that's not bound in any funding period anymore, at any of our department meetings. And then definitions for type of funding requests, which is changed it to reflect the new structure. Before, that was just tiers 1 through 5, and now it's on-campus, off-campus travel, all of that. We also changed the vehicle fuel rates funding cap to reflect the central station policy, which is a state requirement on that. This was the next one, the use of the university name, that was actually a Rocio suggestion. We removed U of N as a suggested name, and instead we say Nevada or University of Nevada, Reno. And then for the catering funding cap, we added a maximum gratuity of 20% to reflect what is already in the central station policy manuals. Powers of the director and funding manager. This one is kind of interesting because it allows for flexibility under extenuating circumstances after funds that have been approved by the commission. The example from this year is late Joe invoices. Say a club was funded during Fall 2, and they were funded for the Joe, but the Joe didn't get the invoice into them until after the Fall 2 funding period had ended. Well, that's not really the club's fault, and we didn't think there was a reason for us to not fund that payment until because of, you know, something like that. Yeah, Brennan.
Are you going to be able to do the same thing for, like, the Wolf Shop? Say, like they need shirts or something, and the Wolf Shop just hasn't been responding.
That's one thing that we're already noticing. We like the idea of the right of first refusal for the Wolf Shop, but the Wolf Shop's going to get swamped, and so that's why it's in there. They can accept as many jobs as they want to, but when it gets to the point of them being like, no, we can't because we're too busy, or they're just not answering anything, then absolutely, yeah, the club should be able to go elsewhere. And that also applies with timing on when those orders can be done and things like that. And so, again, the powers of the director and funding manager, that's added in there to codify what's already been done this year. And then petitioning for remitted funds. The old phrasing said 4 days. This was funding manager Dave Smirnoff's change, I believe, which was 4 days notice to put on the agenda for the department meeting. The new phrasing is 4 business days. Again, Nevada open meeting law. I think that's it. Questions, comments, concerns? Yeah.
So I know before, like, club retreats, that kind of fell under the infrastructure tier. So now would that be considered going under operations or off campus?
that.
Yeah, if you'd like. That's fine.
So pretty much the big like discrepancy between this year's policy like structure and next year's policy structure, if this gets passed, is that off campus, a lot of ties would have had to be lumped underneath like infrastructure, as you're mentioning. So this year, if the retreat is in like San Rafael Park, technically that's off campus, not in within the University of Nevada main campus, that'll be under the, funded under the off campus tier. And then you can just request like a similar application to that, or you can just request a similar application to as you would this year, as long as you don't like put down any no items and stuff like that.
And it's, I mean, you could probably classify it under whichever one you'd like. I think we came to the conclusion of the 60 mile radius that encompasses everything, including the 4-H camp as well.
Yeah.
Which is where a lot of people do their retreats.
Pretty much the 60 mile radius covers the entire Nevada side of Lake Tahoe. So you can do pretty much what you want there.
Mm-hmm. And then just to clarify on the bonus monies for the
community service.
The community service, yeah. Is that 250 for each tier for the on and off campus, or is that just 250 put together for the two tiers?
250 for each, depending on which the application falls under.
Yeah. So theoretically, it's double.
And I may have missed this because I'm backed up on email, but did you define community service?
I don't know.
Here's the issue I see. A lot of clubs do philanthropy and they think that community service is not. Right?
Right. Let's see.
And there's something maybe to consider for the future when you're looking at philanthropy. Maybe
on page 8 and 9.
Maybe the money that's given to the clubs is a loan.
Mm-hmm.
And then they give back those funds once they've earned their money. So
right.
They get the seed money. And this is just based on a couple of clubs that have gotten $3,000 to raise $1,000. So you
mm-hmm.
really lost $2,000.
Yeah.
The club commission, the students have spent $3,000 and only $1,000 was raised. It would just be smarter to cut a check to the plan for $1,000 and save the association $2,000.
There's no definition for community service.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Yeah, we'll definitely look into that one.
And going into what you said about seed funding, so historically in the department, I don't know if you were here for this, but a while ago, the department used to do seed funding, so they gave out loans to clubs and organizations. I don't know if we know exactly why it got removed, maybe just because it wasn't viable.
Sandy would know. I can't remember.
Yeah.
She
mentioned it at one point. That is something that sort of as a commission, we just decided not to put on this funding manual for the sake that it's so experimental, and what we already have is experimental. So if essentially if that was ever brought up again, it would probably be brought up in future departments, and it's just something that we're gonna have to pass on through legacy binders and word of mouth.
And I could definitely see that working out again.
Yeah,
in the future.
Yeah. It's just we would need to refine it from the previous structure that was established many years ago.
Or at least something that said you have to provide accounting information that shows that you made more money than we see in significantly more, not a dollar more.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we'll look into putting a definition in there for community service for sure. And on anything else? Okay, so that wraps up my presentation. Thanks for having me in.
Yeah, great. Thank you for coming. So with that presentation, if there's no additional discussion, I'm seeking a motion. Senator Jackson?
I move to recommend favorably SBR 84, a binding resolution to modify the club support funding manual.
Senator
Jackson?
Senator Jackson? All right. We recommend favorably. Thank you for coming in, guys.
Right on.
We do agenda item 6B, discussion on committee of engagement. I'm going to be right back on the draft. I handed out the definition, right? So,
all good?
I just got them in case, so if it does
work, okay. So while we're waiting, basically what we're doing is...
Hello. Am I in trouble?
No. Do you want... It printed weird. So we're going to be kind of, we've been looking over the descriptions for all the different Senate committees,
uh-huh.
And Senator Jackson and I made a big binding resolution to change Public Affairs, University Affairs, and Academics to to reflect more of kind of how the committee has evolved, and to fit more of the idea of the responsibilities of a senator and the Senate body as a whole. And so this whole thing was kind of inspired by the Committee on Civic Engagement, given that in recent years they've been more of a programming board inside of Senate than anything else. And so we just wanted to, so when we reached out to all the chairs, the chair, Chairman Green, didn't really want to make any changes. So we're going to review it. Unfortunately, he's not able to make it today. Does anybody here sit on civic engagement? Yeah, that's why Jacoby's here. Senator H. Jackson is also here. Then we asked you to come in, and then we're also going to call Alexi Jacobson. So first, if we could first talk to Alexi and then get your opinion on the whole thing,
sure.
Based on how it reads, if you just wanted to read it. So with that in mind.
Okay.
So let me just call Alexi really quick. Does everybody understand kind of the point? We're like, okay, cool.
I knew I brought my glasses for the right reason.
So this is Lexi Jacobson. Lexi Jacobson.
I know she's, yeah.
Uh-oh. Hi.
Hi, what's up?
I'm actually at the National Aquarium with Hayden Thaddeus. Do you guys remember him?
Mm-hmm.
No. We don't remember him.
We talked about this too because he was a senator when we did this, and he actually helped me write the description for it.
Oh, okay. So did he want to say something too?
I'm sure he will, yeah. But
great.
I mean, it's just kind of loud, so I won't put us on speaker. Plus, we'd be kind of obnoxious, but yeah.
All right.
I'm sure he'll chime in if he feels like I'm missing
great.
Something.
Great. Yeah, we won't take too much of your time then. So basically,
okay.
What the point is, so we're trying to change or adjust all the committee duties to kind of how we believe Senate should be run and what the duty of the Senate body is. And recently, the committee that was written has kind of morphed into the Senate mini programming committee. And, you know, we're not exactly programmers, so we're kind of just taking a look at the verbiage of it and seeing, like, if, you know, what we can do about that. Do you have, like, access to the Senate rules or just kind of give a background of what you did, what the inspiration was, what the point of it was?
Yeah, so Kaden and I were both senators at the time, and they had sent two senators, a director of PR, and the president to this conference in Philadelphia, and it was on engagement and service learning. And so that was like a big wave that was coming about. They were just trying to, you know, encourage students to like not only give back to like their campus, but, like to the community around them. So we thought there was a lot that Senate could do specifically for that, and we wanted to give students the opportunity to like connect with like nonprofits and and we really wanted to encourage service learning in the classroom. So like I'm sure Sandy told you about how there's like this big thing where a bunch of nursing students like went out and did like research on like the homeless population, and like through their service they like learned a lot about the community. So that was another big push that we had. You know, I'm not really familiar with what's been going on recently since I graduated, but like what do you guys think? Are you thinking about like taking some of that out about like service learning specifically, or what?
Not necessarily. I think that kind of, we're just trying getting general kind of background right now, as to what has recently been happening, but just kind of changing it so they promote more of a framework than actually being the programmers themselves.
Okay, yeah. No, I can totally get behind that. Like, I know, like, Boone put on that Service Palooza, and that's something that I did when I was the first chair, and there's just like a lot of things that we wanted to do, but because like it was just a new committee, we were still trying to figure it out.
Right.
Do you have anything to add, Kaden? About anything? Hold on. We like wanted to be less about programming and more about framework. Do you have anything to say?
Yeah.
Hello. Hi, what's up?
Oh, hi, sorry, okay. I think that, like, the most, I mean, do you guys follow the like civic engagement definition that Sandy put together for the Center for Student Engagement, like that model, like where it incorporates like academic research that's considered civic engagement, where it considers philanthropy, where it considers like all those different eight areas.
We try our best.
Yeah. So that's a really good model, I think. And I think that in any way that you can encourage any of those things happening, whether it's, I mean, certain things are programming, like, you know, like I always pictured like ASUN would have like a big philanthropy event that happens every year, like that. Like I'm at the University of Maryland right now, and like they have this thing called Thon, and it raised over $1 million this year. And like, that's a big part. I mean, that's a part of civic engagement, you know, as is like, you know, going out into the community and doing hours and things like that, or, you know, doing research that impacts your community specifically, or you know, whatever. There's a lot of different areas that I think haven't been ignored necessarily in the past by the committee, but just haven't been, like, I mean, there's just a lot of different opportunities all across the board. So, yeah, it could be less about programming, sure, and, like, the service delivery stuff. That's, I don't think that stuff is necessarily as important as, like, getting service learning in the classroom or encouraging students to vote. That's another huge part, like, you know, democracy and getting students to talk about issues that affect them, things like that.
Right.
So I understand, like, the like desire to change it, I guess, but like I think it almost needs to be, I don't know, broader in some ways. I don't know. That's my thoughts. Here's Lexi.
Thank you.
Hi. Yeah, I mean, I kind of agree with him. There is like the Office of Service Learning and Civic Engagement on campus. And I think they could be like a really good tool. And if you guys do want to put on programs, I think you should go to them and ask them to put them on, because they have like professional staff that are paid for and things like that. And you know, sorry, what'd you say? What? Okay, he's talking. But, yeah, and I mean, if you always, like, want more civic engagement programming specifically, you can talk to, like, the programmers about that, but I just think what's really, like, he keeps adding on.
Is that new professional staff position created yet, like, for community engagement?
Kaden, we're interviewing on campus next week.
Oh, great. Okay, yeah. So I think that's a big part of it, too. You guys should be working with whoever that staff member is at time, because that can be a huge part of it as well, I think. Yeah, anyway, here's Lexi.
Hi, we're just talking so much.
It's all right.
Do you have any, like, specific questions, or you just, like, wanted to get some feedback on, like, what we thought about it?
Yeah, that's kind of, I just wanted to get the spirit of it from the people that wrote it. Do you guys have questions?
I mean, we just felt like Senate was, like, missing a lot, and because that was kind of just, like, a topic that, like, wasn't being addressed, we made the committee very, like, all-encompassing, but now that, like, there's more, I don't know, people in positions on campus that, like, are encouraging that, I feel like you guys can take it in whatever direction you feel is the most appropriate.
Great.
And if you don't feel comfortable programming, then, like, don't program. It's just all about, like, awareness and stuff, so... You have to keep us updated on what you do.
All right, we will do.
All right, is there any more questions for either of us?
That's it. Thank you for being available.
No, you're welcome. Best of luck.
Yep, enjoy your day.
Okay, you too. Bye.
Great. So, kind of as I understood that the whole point was to promote, like, the definition of civic engagement that you had come up with.
Can I contextualize this a little bit more? So a few years back, the university, through the Center for Student Engagement, applied to be a NASPA lead institution. And that designation, if it would be granted to us, would be a firm resolve on the part of the University of Nevada, Reno, to proclaim that civic learning and democratic engagement would be a major component of student engagement. So we submitted the application. When I say we, I mean ASUN was aware of it. We got accepted. So the Center for Student Engagement moved immediately to start reframing, not necessarily creating new programs and services, mind you, but reframing how we delivered programs and services. Likewise, we went to ASUN and said, okay, your student government, this should be about civic learning, right? It makes sense. So the immediate response was, why don't we create a committee on civic engagement? And therefore, we can show, right, that the student government supports this. And I think one of the first things was, we'll do a service palooza and we'll do a, we'll have a, the service project. And that even took a couple of years to put into place because I think it was Brandon that had to negotiate that out with the city and stuff. That might have been like a year or so later. In the process of all that, the reason I appreciated this was that we did not have an infrastructure in place within the Center for Student Engagement. As the time wore on, and as Kaden became president, he was like, okay, this is bigger than just ASU and being able to handle it. Let's move forward to approve a position within the Center for Student Engagement that would actually be responsible. Remember, GivePulse came online. We went from being a lead institution to being a consulting institution, which means we now have a cohort of 8 universities from across the country that actually look to Nevada to frame their own civic learning and democratic engagement. By the time GivePulse came online, and I'll be honest with you, I'm a little grateful that whole thing didn't work out. We haven't been able to fill the position. Luckily, we're interviewing for the position next year or next week. So with that in place, and if this sounds convoluted, it is. Things have kind of been working simultaneously through ASUN, through the Center for Student Engagement, through the NASPA LEAD Initiative. But we've been progressing moving forward. Where I understand and appreciate the programming that was done previously by the Committee on Civic Engagement, I don't know that the expansive programming is necessary. Do I think you should continue to do the service project? Absolutely. Do I think you should continue to do Service Palooza? Absolutely. I think anything past that, when this new position comes in, the position in and of itself is gonna reach out to all sorts of entities across campus, of which we would like the chair of civic engagement to be a part of that committee. Does that make sense? We're gonna reach out to the Office of Service Learning to be a part of that, nonprofit organizations. Hopefully we could find service recipients. And that's where Kaden was referring to the model. If you go to the Center for Student Engagement, we actually have a model for student engagement that involves all entities across campus, our nonprofit and for-profit partners, service recipients, and academic affairs. So what we're doing is I'm hoping that we can get everybody moving in the same direction to push the 6 components right now related to civic engagement. Engage Scholarship, which is what he was talking about, Scott Mensing and the undergraduate research and all that, volunteerism, GivePulse, and all our nonprofit partners. Help me out, James. Self-governance. You guys, I can't make you want to govern yourselves, but, and clubs and organizations. Philanthropy. Democratic engagement, meaning that not only during the full-term election, but in midterm elections, student government elections, city elections, we're out there reminding you as members of this learning community, you have an obligation to be engaged in the process. And there's a 6th one missing. Well, anyway, go to the model.
Volunteerism, community service.
Oh, the community service one, yeah. Okay. So I understand and appreciate what you're doing, to be honest with you. You guys are ahead of the curve. Typically, ASUN waits for there to be this huge gap before you address a desire to adjust. So I appreciate the adjustment you're approaching. 2, I think the body needed to come to the conclusion that it's not a programming board, right? Should there be specific signature events? I'll be honest with you, the Veterans Breakfast is pretty cool. I do think that the body should remain, maybe that can remain a signature kind of a program for all of you. And to be frank with you, it's also not difficult to manage. When you start getting into really, really large size events, now what Dennis did is he reached out to people for Service Palooza. This also doesn't mean you have to work alone, right? Go to the programmers, they're the experts on this, let them help you. The Office of Service Learning, and do you want to say something?
Oh, I was just going to say what you said with the Veterans Breakfast, and I talked to Senator Green about this, and he was going to say it, but he can't be here, was when you look at these 2 specific programs, they do work with the Programming Board for Service Palooza. Mm-hmm. It's Taste of Reno. What the committee's in charge of is connecting students to the community.
Right.
And that's what they're doing. It's the the same thing with the Veterans Breakfast. It's not a program or a concert or a, you're actually connecting the university community with Senate and other students, and the other one you're doing a nonprofit community student. So that's really more about, when you read what all these are about, one of Senate's jobs is to connect with the community.
And
so I don't know if it's a program, if it's an event, as much as it is a connection.
Can I ask the people that sit on civic engagement right now, do you see that? Like, is that something that's effectively happening this year?
I think, that's exactly what I wrote for James, is there's a difference between programming and providing opportunities. And within this definition, it says providing opportunities for students to, civically engage. So I think that, having those signature events is, the perfect way to do that. And just there are some logistical and programming things that go into that, but there's a huge difference, just what Sandy said and what James said. So I think they should stay.
And let me catch you up on the Office of Service Learning. We took a step this past year. We took a step back, and I went to Elizabeth Brown and Stacey Muse and Amy and said, you three need to start coordinating better. Because if we're going to maximize and be good stewards of public monies, we can't all be going out to the nonprofits and bothering them. By the way, you need to know there's a ton of new paperwork that's been introduced. You guys, by the time you go to a volunteer site, it's been vetted out by one of those three people. That's where Amy's at right now. She's vetting out a site. There's a whole form that has to be filled out. The site has to sign it, somebody like their director or coordinator. We come back, it has to be submitted to legal counsel. Why? Because the university has to concern itself with the fact that we need not be sending you guys to unsafe locations to engage civically, whether it's through service learning, PAC internship programs, or volunteering. The Office of Service Learning is overwhelmed right now just with the service learning component. You need to know it's Stacy by herself now and only one graduate student. I think they may be looking at hiring a director position, but the other realization that hit them is that really just the service learning component and getting nonprofits to actually jump on board for an entire semester, mind you, is work in and of itself. They are slowly feeding more and more episodic volunteerism stuff back to the Center for Student Engagement. Why? Because we have Give Pulse. So for them, I've been asked to sit on the Service Learning Council, I sit on the Faculty Development Council, and on the Research and Assessment Council. We are gonna hold a 2-day boot camp for service. This is how invested the provost is. He found money and basically told the committee, do a call for applications for faculty to submit legitimate service learning syllabi. And if you guys approve them, I will give that faculty member an additional stipend, okay, to carry out that service learning course. To me, that is the university truly investing in service learning. Yeah, we quickly realized how much work that was. On top of that, we realized that some faculty wanted to deliver service learning courses, but didn't have the tools to do it. So we're doing a 2-day boot camp for faculty on how to truly put together a service learning course and carry it out. So know that they're doing a lot of work, but it's just that. Just the service learning component is a lot of work. Meanwhile, what they realize is that ASUN and the Center for Student Engagement, through the purchase of GivePulse now, you guys are creating a demand that where we can meet the demand for episodic volunteerism. You're also starting to create a demand for, hey, we want to be learning this in the classroom. They think that's a good thing. But then the realization hit, wow, there's a lot of work that needs to go into this. So we're still in the process of evolving all of this. Everything the Center for Student Engagement does, for example, creating this board will always include ASUN, right? The Chair for Civic Engagement, maybe the President of RHA, I don't know. We'll figure that out. The point being that what you're seeing now is a good step toward the continued evolution of this particular part of the association. And know that in a couple of years, we're probably going to have to revisit it again.
Okay.
I think if we were to reword just really have to stress on the concept of providing opportunities for students. So something like we did, like the Nevada Reading Week, at first we were just looking for ASUN volunteers, but instead making that a program or something that you're going to put on Gift Pulse and really reach out to other people so they can participate. So we make the connection and we're the ones that are working with the community, but then inviting students from all across campus to join us and volunteering or engaging with that.
See, and that could be a program. Let me reframe that a little bit.
Yeah.
Where the chair goes to this committee and says, hey, we want to create a volunteer opportunity for students specifically related to reading development. We need you to put that on the agenda and to put it on Gift Pulse. And so you frame the program and you let the committee in that position do all the work.
Yeah, that's awesome.
That's what I want you to interpret, create opportunities. Should the committee in and of itself be running around gathering volunteers? No, right? You can volunteer if you want. You can encourage your peers to volunteer. You guys shouldn't have to be dealing with all of that infrastructure part of it. That's where the programming comes in. What do you think your programmers do? They're running around carrying out the details of all this kind of stuff. So if the goal is to free you from that, yes, absolutely.
This is one thing I was thinking of. Do you think in this description we need to add something about, it touches a lot on community service and volunteerism, but there's nothing really explicitly about democratic engagement or political involvement. Do you think that's a, and this is for everyone, something that we should amend or add in?
Could I ask that you add a handful of words? Through the student engagement model.
Okay.
It's that simple.
Mm-hmm. That's what I'm, honestly, it's pretty fragmented right now. I feel like we could have a more unified description.
Can you go to the Center for Student Engagement website, please?
Mm-hmm. I'm on there right now. What do you want to look at?
The model itself.
Oh.
Go to, I think it should say a student engagement model somewhere in there.
Maybe in services.
And you'll see how expansive it is. It takes into consideration academic departments, all of the student services departments, residential life. The model in and of itself isn't a model for the Center for Student Engagement. The model is a campus-wide student engagement model. And ASUN is listed there as being one of those partners that drives, that drives the community toward the six components. Can any one of us do it alone? No. And see, that's what Stacy and these folks are starting to figure out. That's what Scott Mensing started figuring out. There's a difference between undergraduate research and undergraduate engaged research. So I'm meeting with him later this afternoon because he's like, I remember when I first brought it up to him and he was like, whoa, research happens in a vacuum. You write a paper, you turn it in. Engaged research, you take the next step and you actually go out and solve the problem in the community. So now that he's had time to think about it, he's like, wow, this is like taking the student all the way from identifying the problem, researching the problem, finding the solution, and then applying it. When you look at the model, that's what I mean by this isn't about the Center for Student Engagement or even ASUN. It's about the learning community working collectively toward civic learning and democratic engagement. So Hannah, that's what I mean by all of this can happen through the model. Where the Committee for Civic Engagement fits in would be through the Division of Student Services component and ASU component of it. I don't know how else to make it like simpler. Because I get what you say about this being fragmented. I think what you want to do is all drive it into, hey, here's a picture of it and this is what it looks like. And these are all the partners. And
I think that it's just good to, like, moving forward with an outline is just laying out what civic engagement is based on the definition from the Center for Student Engagement for the university. And then kind of going into these things, like creating and establishing the execution of, or facilitating the execution of, that's like going to talk to the committees of this stuff, and then outlining the small stuff after that. So it's more of an organized thing.
Yeah, so play with it. I mean, I'm not sure what it's going to look like, but I'm sure you guys will figure out.
Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I appreciate it.
Sure.
Does that, anybody else have any opinion?
I guess this can be another conversation for another time, because there's got to be a lot of detail and depth in this, I guess, but if we're going to frame it in that way, I think we have to also think of other people we could potentially step on their toes. I know Legislative Affairs does a lot with like the political side of civic engagement, so I think just defining like what roles and duties are of each department so people don't feel like they're like infringing on other people's job duties or responsibilities.
Dr. B.
I guess you would also run the gambit of moving something out of University Affairs, because don't they already work with Legislative Affairs for Carson stuff? And is it them that does that?
That's
public affairs,
yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense to create that clear distinction. It's just balancing between keeping committee descriptions broad, but outlining them clearly. Whereas public affairs makes sense that they work with the legislature and stuff, but they would work with them in a different capacity than civic engagement would work with them. And civic engagement would work with them to promote giftfuls and all this different stuff in conjunction with people that work there, not necessarily working directly with them to benefit the students, policy-wise.
I just know that's an issue, especially with, the Committee on Safety, Sustainability, and Wellness right now. It's like they have so many similar things to the Deputy Chief of Staff that they never would have felt like they were, overstepping their bounds or, working on a project that they were already working on, so I think it's important to make that distinction. And there was one other thing I was going to say about and I think with the Committee on Public Affairs, it really has to do with policy and the student's voice, where civic engagement is more so providing opportunities to engage, which could kind of seem similarly, but I think that mostly their duty is to advocate on behalf of policies. And so there's a little bit of a distinction there, but I think this will be an ongoing process, but if we can work on the wording of, those things a little bit more, and it might take a committee discussion or getting, the new chairs or even the old chairs together and kind of discussing what we think.
Let the record show that Senator Fang and Senator Smith left the room at 1:04 p.m. and Senator Smith entered the room at 1:04 p.m. Yeah, I like that. It definitely is, now that we're wrapping up the session. I feel my only concern is that, with a new session, every session halfway through realizes, the issues with each committee, and so it would be good, I think, to introduce at least the chairs to this concept and this idea at the beginning, and so they can more clearly have a better vision. Definitely including veterans, people for civic engagement, people that have been in this discussion, if anybody wants to participate. But definitely it is something that I think that should be tackled in the earlier parts of the 85th, just so for most of their session they can work with a more focused vision, specifically in this committee. Any further discussion? Seeing none, moving to agenda item 6C, Legacy Minor. I already have a couple ideas. Secretary Jacobson. Not Jacobson.
Godoy.
Yeah. Told me that there's some discrepancies with the SAS and the Senate rules based on stuff we've been changing in the SAS. So I'm going to put that and to check over consistency for those two things. There's something with the PAC provisions bill, which I'm still not sure what was the issue with. Where is that, Senator Jackson?
The issue was kind of, I tried to look at the minutes and read what was going on, but when it was presented, Senator Bond wasn't present at the time to present her bill, so it was then tabled. So I wasn't sure if there was anything structurally that was wrong with the bill. kind of saw what I thought and changed it, but if you have anything.
I think it's because like Constitutions is referred to as a program, but they don't want that there. I don't remember the specific reasoning behind it.
Right.
Because I introduced a similar bill, like going over the SAS and changing all of these things in a specific, what's the word, scholarship.
Right.
And then Sasha realized that hers was too much of a generalization and didn't, it was really more of like clerical things, but it was enough to have the bill tabled.
Okay.
But it was a bit minor, nothing too pressing.
Okay.
I was just confused, is the problem the actual bill itself and the purpose of the bill, or is it in the implementation, like the being enacted clauses? Like, I just noticed that she didn't go line by line and strike each part that said, program, but she did like rename like any time that it's mentioned. So I didn't know if like that was, I just didn't know what was the issue with the bill itself, or was it just like the purpose of it?
It was the being enacted clause.
Okay.
You're right.
Sweet, so being enacted clause.
And then the other thing, you didn't.
Yeah, I made the changes to that and then sent it to the speaker, yeah.
Okay, so that's not, will not be there.
You're welcome.
And then the last one that I have is, so there was that task force or committee, I don't know what you call it, to come over the SAS one more time, and we're about halfway through that, but we still have the notes. I think you have that doc.
Mm-hmm.
So if you could send that to me, I'm going to also put that in the Lexi binder. And then it'll be up to the next session to finish that and then give that document to government operations so they have somewhere to start. So are there any other ideas that you guys think would need to be put in the Lexi binder?
I'd say potentially just going through, checking back like within the first couple weeks of the session, when the departments, so like programming, clubs and orgs, things like that, just check back in with them as early as possible once they finish turning over with getting new directors, getting new members of the department, in order to seeing as how they constantly evolve and change in the things they do, the policies they enact and things like that, just making sure, checking with them as early as possible to show that we're current with what they do.
Great.
In terms of our documents. I think that'd be beneficial.
Sweet. Anything else? Alright, sweet. Seeing no more discussion, moving to agenda item 7, public comment. Is there any public comment this time? Seeing none, moving to agenda item 8, adjournment at 1:10 p.m. Thanks, Hayden.